Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Dave Nassané. Dave is a number one best-selling author and caregiving expert who speaks about how to deal with burnout, how to survive the grief process, and remain positive even when you just want to quit. His new book, It's My Life to Thrive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver, provides insights and hope to the tens of millions of people who become the main caretaker for their loved ones. Dave is the host of the Caregiver Dave Show, a syndicated radio show on Healthy Life Radio Network, and he also appears regularly on mainstream TV and radio. Dave, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the show today, and thanks so much for coming on and sharing your experience and your expertise with us.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure's all ours, Dave. You have a fascinating subject to share with us today. And I know that you have been writing and speaking and presenting on this subject for quite some time. And unfortunately, one gets to be an expert on this topic from real life, real personal experience. And when we did our pre-interview, I had asked you to tell the story of how you became Caregiver Dave, and you started to talk about, you know, your very normal, happy life as a father and a husband and someone who was running a service station, until one day when your wife described what she called the headache of her life. So why don't you take us from that point and explain to us what happened that day and how you became Caregiver Dave.
Sure. I was just a normal person like all of us, you know, have a gas station, had it for 40 years. And when we're supposed to be entering into the emptiness phase of life, where we raised all our three daughters, got them out of the house, got them married off even, each one twice. My wife started complaining about a headache she'd been having. Headache of her life, she said. She joked around. She wanted me to call Dr. Kevorkian to put her out of her misery. That's how bad the pain was. And it was a Labor Day weekend, so we didn't really want to rush to the ER on a holiday, you know, and go through all of that mess. But she was going to go to see the doctor that following Tuesday, because Monday was a holiday. But instead, the ambulance had to come, and she suffered a stroke, lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side. And in that moment, our world turned upside down, and the next 2 years, maybe 2.5 years, was a living hell for both of us. And Charlene was angry and bitter most of the time. And after a while, I just didn't think I could take it anymore. I sat down, I wrote her a letter. I said, "Charlene, why are you so mean to me? It's so hard being your husband, taking care of you 24/7, not receiving any love or appreciation crumbs in return. I know it's hard on you, but you're making it even harder on me to care for you. I just don't think I can be with you." And, you know, Georgiana, I read that letter to myself over and over again, and I just said to myself, I can't give this to the mother of my children, to my soulmate, to the woman who I've been with for 23 years. And so I just put it aside, filed it in my filing cabinet, and went on in my loneliness and despair until just a couple days later, I find this business card in my pocket, and it was inviting me to a caregiver support group. I don't know how it got there, or who gave it to me. I didn't even know what a caregiver was, let alone a support group. But I figured somebody gave this to me, obviously. I got nothing to lose. Maybe I'll go. And I went, and everything changed for me. I met people there who were just like me, burned out caregivers. And I realized that if I didn't take care of me, I couldn't take care of Charlene. And I remembered the airlines telling me every single time I'm on a plane that I tune them out, "In the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before your loved one." And I realized that I had to do that. So from that point on, I just started taking care of me, even though it felt selfish, so that I can take care of her. And slowly she started coming around.
I have so many questions for you. Number one, I'm assuming that all of this happened after she came out of rehab, right? I mean, She went to rehab.
Yes, we were 6 weeks in the hospital. We were six mm-hmm. weeks at home rehab. And then we were 6 weeks going to a hospital inpatient. So 6, 12, 18 weeks doing all of this. And I was spending most of the first 6 weeks in a hospital bed next to us. They should be breaking the rules, but they had to force me to go home and bathe and eat properly. But yeah.
Okay, so that's when, you know, you think, well, we're going to get past this acute problem and things are going to get better. But that's not what happens. As many of us know, what happens is you get past the acute phase and it's just beginning, right?
We were optimistic. We thought this would just be a little speed bump. You know, we've had speed bumps before. But unfortunately, the days turned into weeks. The weeks turned into months. The months turned into years. The years turned into decades, and I'm sure glad nobody told me back then that 30 years later I would still be dealing with this. I think I would have given up. I should have been on a need-to-know basis, and I was.
There you go. And, Dave, what do you mean by, if you could be specific, what do you mean by I started to take care of myself? What does that mean, if you could describe it, you know, on a day-to-day basis?
Well, to be blunt, it was being selfish. It was, you know, calling my friend that I hadn't called in 6 weeks and say, hey, you know, we usually go to the movies once a week. Let's go to a movie. I'll find somebody to be with my wife. And go to the gym, make an appointment, you know, with my trainer and do that. Go get a massage. Just do things. In fact, for 3 weeks in a row, 3 weekends in a row, I went and saw relatives out of the state who I hadn't seen in decades. One was in New York, one was in Florida, and one was in Nashville. And I had to just tell my wife I was working late because she would be upset if I told her that I was going out to have some fun without her. And I just didn't want to deal with it, you know. And I came back rejuvenated. It felt so good to recharge my batteries. And I was able to continue what I was doing with a great attitude and take better care. It made me a better caregiver to recharge my batteries.
Well, what's interesting, as I was going, you know, through your materials and taking a look at your profile and synapse of your books, is that what you're describing as saving yourself as a caregiver is pretty much what we don't realize applies across the board, whether it's being a parent, whether it's working in an office, whether it's being in a marriage,
right,
whatever it is. People do not prioritize their needs. They don't prioritize their life. And what happens is they become resentful, burned out, tired, fed up, hopeless. I mean, all of these things. So if you can kind of shed some light on that in terms of, you know, we talked a lot about like what are the do's and what are the don'ts, and don't they kind of apply across the board? When you went through this, did it make you a happier, more self-sufficient individual? Were there other transformations in you apart from just being a more resilient caregiver?
Yes, you know, how many people have had their cell phone flashing at them 2%, but 30 minutes ago it was at 20%, and you said, I better charge this, and we forget. And now all of a sudden it's, you know, flashing, danger, Will Robinson, or you knew you had to get gas, and now all of a sudden your little light comes on in the car, and now you're not near a gas station, you start to panic. And that's what caregivers do, you know, when they are fed up or they're just at their wit's end, and maybe they yelled at their loved one because their loved one was doing something or saying something that you took the wrong way, that should be a clue that you need a timeout. It's time to count to 10. It's time to walk around the block. It's time to take care of yourself because you are out of control. And so you asked me a lot of questions, so I'm not sure that I can remember all of them, but guide me along if I didn't answer the question.
Sure. Well, you know, I think that this subject is really profound and it's really important because we see it acutely at the time the event happens, and we're suddenly stuck in this limbo land. of just not being able to move forward and not being able to move backward and just having to deal on a kind of an urgent, it's an urgent situation. So we find ourselves on a regular basis in fight or flight, you know, in stress, in having to react rather urgently to things. And if we look at this, you know, in this caregiving situation, we could probably apply these wonderful things that you talk about in our life across the board. I love the fact that you said, you know what, I took off and I went to see families and I took off and I went to have a good time and rejuvenate myself. Because if you look at relationships, you look at marriages, you look at work situations, isn't that what's going on anyway? So tell us, what was your relationship with your wife like before the stroke? And what was it like afterwards? What improved for you and what improved for her? Because I think that's where the gold is, if you don't mind, Dave, because you obviously went through, you know, trial by fire together. So can you share that? Like, what was it like before? And what did this opportunity give the both of you to experience and to grow into?
Sure. Let me take those in order. First of all, yes, I would feel trapped, you know, like, oh my God, like you're in a prison cell, you know, like you're in caregiver prison and there's no possibility of parole. And that just really makes you freak out. And so that's when you need to calm down and gather your thoughts and start thinking clearly. And you're right. Everyone, that everything I'm telling you will apply to everyone. It just applies to caregivers more because, every caregiver used to be a normal person and they bring whatever baggage that they had and was dealing with into the caregiving situation and it does amplify it. So before my wife and I, we had a fairy tale storybook romance, courtship and marriage. I mean, things were great. We went together for a year and 3 months. She was a little older than me, so I was an inexperienced young person and she was a little more experienced, divorced, had a couple of daughters from a previous marriage, 5 years and 10 years old. And a lot of people were questioning my wisdom in dating an older woman with, you know, children and maybe an ex-husband who was a little crazy out there. But I've never had an argument with her. We got along so great. She was a gourmet cook. I mean, the way to a man's heart, they say, is through your stomach. And she's very, very good cook. So it was a perfect relationship. After a year and 3 months, you know, things started getting serious to where, you know, you're either going to have to marry this woman or break up. And I was still in my third year at USC, and it wasn't a good time to get married. I felt like I was too young and had too much life to live. But a part of me says, you know, this is your soulmate in all good probability. And if you leave this person, you might be kicking yourself in the butt the rest of your life saying, you let her go, like that scene in Princess Bride. You know, you let your true love go. Shame on you. Boo. And so we both were strong in our faith with God. And so helping God to strengthen our future marriage, we decided to take the plunge and jump into the water feet first. And we're glad we did because we've been together 45 years. So let's talk about the stroke, right? Midship. So 21 years into our 45-year marriage, she has this stroke. And 2 years is hell. I mean, like I told you, I almost left because I couldn't take it. And she was grieving. Let's talk about the grief process here, you know?
Sure,
there's
sure.
Denial. Anytime we suffer loss, we go through grief, whether it's a girlfriend who dumps you, or the doctor says you have cancer, or the attorney says bankruptcy is the only way out, and so on. The dog dies, anything. So we go through a denial. Oh my gosh, this isn't happening. Well, after you realize that it is happening, you move on to anger. And if you don't realize it's happening, then you become delusional. You start believing and creating your own reality, and we don't want that. Bargaining is where you try to get out of it. You try to negotiate your way. Like with the girlfriend, you say, oh, can we still be friends? Or, you know, if it's an illness or cancer or death, you know, we talk to God and we try to bargain with him. And when that doesn't work, what's the next step? We get angry. And anger is a good thing, but not if it's taken to the extreme. You know, we get angry at ourselves. We get angry at the doctor. We get angry at God. We get angry at our spouse. And we have to realize that anger is a normal thing, but that we have to get over it. The next thing is depression, when we realize that being angry doesn't help. And that's very serious, because that can lead to suicide, as we saw with Robin Williams and Kate Spade and Kurt Cobain, people like that. But we covet to get to that wonderful coveted place called acceptance, embracing the new normal. We say, you know what, if she never gets better, if I'm going to be a caregiver the rest of my life, I'm okay with that, because we've managed to get a routine going, get organized. You know, she still cannot talk after 21 years, but you know what, she can communicate through Pictionary and charades, two games I hate, by the way, but I'm learning to love. And she still can't walk, but we got her this beautiful power chair, and it goes faster than I can go. And we travel the world, just sharing our messages, speaking on stages and television, and she'll go with me to the fun places and won't go with me to the places that are kind of boring in the Midwest. And I won't mention what they are, because I don't want to offend them. But yeah, some places are nicer than others. But my message is to get out all over the world. So I am as happy as I've ever been. Our marriage is as blessed as it's ever been. It's just different.
Right. So your wife has never recovered. I know many people, my father, my ex-husband, many people who have strokes, actually, you know, they kind of resume, you know, the majority of their function. You know, they may have a weak arm or a weak leg, but many of them can speak and communicate, and many can go back to work. I was amazed, because my father-in-law had he had two strokes in his 40s, and when you met him, you would never know. You would never know. He had one stroke, no less two. So it must have been a pretty severe stroke for your wife never to have recovered. I can imagine that was very frustrating for her, not to be able to communicate, not to be able to talk.
It was a massive stroke. And, you know, there was warning. We were at the hospital in time, but the paramedics had a choice to take us to the smaller, closer hospital, which was privately owned, or the larger medical center, which was just about 10 minutes further away. And they asked me, you know, where do you want me to take her? And I said, I don't know. Where would you take your wife if she was having a stroke? I gave away the most important decision that I would ever make in my life to some stranger in my house in a paramedic uniform. Don't ever do that. But I didn't know. I wasn't prepared. So they let the three-hour window go by. It was a blood clot. You have 3 hours to fix it, or there will be brain damage. And as far as recovering, many people do recover. Many people do not recover. It just depends on what kind of a stroke and where the stroke is.
Right.
And if you get a bleed, that most of the time a bleed is fatal. You will probably die. And if you don't die, then you will probably recover rather quickly. The other kind of stroke is a clot, where your blood is not going to the brain. And those, most of the time, are you don't die. You will recover. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, it is very disabling.
Exactly.
And hers was a clot.
Right. So I could only imagine what it must have been like for your wife. You know, one minute to be laughing and enjoying the Labor Day weekend, and the next moment winding up, you know, with paramedics leaning over her, putting her in an ambulance, and then to discover that she cannot communicate anymore the way she used to. So.
That it was very hard on her, yes.
That must have been very rough, very rough transition, you know, for both of you. We are, believe it or not, we have just finished the first segment. We've got three segments in the show. We've got a lot of time to talk about this. We're going to take a short break, Dave, but when we come back, would really appreciate you describing kind of your emotional trajectory from the time she came home until you reached a point where you said, I can't do this anymore. Because what we know is that we kind of grow in these situations, not just our loved one who's going through the crisis, but we grow. And it sounds like you grew tremendously during that period. So we want to hear all about that, because that's that's a very wonderful aspect of suffering. The other side of suffering, of course, is growth and wisdom. So we're going to take a very short break. We're going to be back. Listeners, don't go anywhere. We're going to be back in just a moment with Dave Messini, who is sharing his story about being a caregiver to his beloved wife.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
Talking with Dave Messini. Dave is a number one best-selling author and caregiving expert who speaks and presents and has a radio show and makes live appearances about what all of us really need to know when we find ourselves, and many of us do find ourselves, in caregiving situations for our loved ones. Dave, before the break, I had asked you, when we come back, could you please kind of share with us the emotional process and trajectory? I mean, I'm sure you went through many different stages. Maybe you tried to get other people to help. Maybe you kind of went off quietly and screamed in the closet. What was going on for you? We know what was going on for your wife, and it was very difficult, very challenging, and very stressful. How did you cope with that? Because I'm sure people who are listening, they're going through it. They're going through the frustration. They're going through the anxiety. They're going through the kind of frantic choice-making that they never thought they would have to. So how did you handle that process? And finally, you did come to this point where you said, I can't do this anymore. So can you take the listener through that? And I'm sure many of them will completely, it'll completely resonate with them.
Well, back in the hospital, her most biggest frustration would be aphasia. And I didn't even know what that was. But it's where the brain just cannot put together the English language or any language, even if it's, the language for the blind, Braille or whatever, and sign language. The brain cannot remember how to spell the words or how to put the words into sentence, so she can't speak. And the brain also cannot remember how to form the lips and the tongue and the mouth to make the words. So you can imagine the thing that separates us from the animals is our language. And to take that away, she was a very strong-willed woman and a very in control. She was an interior decorator, a wedding coordinator. She's a seamstress, a gourmet cook. She's like Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman all rolled into one. So to suddenly take that all away, you know, it was very, very frustrating for her. And she, anger was her favorite emotion. She thought
imagine.
We were all joking when she was just talking gibberish, because her brain can hear what she wants to say, and she'll just say, you know, blah, 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 or whatever gibberish would come out of her mouth. And she'd look at us like, yes, what's the answer? And finally we had to like tape her on a tape recorder and play it back to her that what was coming out of her mouth was gibberish that we could not understand. And at that point, she started becoming depressed, saying, oh, crap, I'm sure to herself, I'm in deep doo-doo. And so it was very painful to watch her go through this. You know, I felt her pain, and I felt more terrible about what she was going through than what I was going through. What I was going through was nothing compared to what she was going through. So for a while, it was all about her. And I was feeling her pain, and I was doing everything for her. But as time went on, you can only do that for so long, because you're just going to burn out, not taking care of your needs, not sleeping right, not eating right, not isolating you from your friends and so on. To you get to that point where I wrote the letter, like I told you. I'm not sure how long it took for me to go from being the loving, caring husband, catering and doting over his wife until there was nothing left to give, giving and giving and giving, realizing you're totally out of resources. You know, that tank is on empty, and it pulls over because there's no more gas.
Right.
But the growth, what did I learn from all of that? I learned that I was so in despair that I was ready to walk away from the whole thing. And that's not like me, because I'm a faithful man. I'm a man of faith. And, I have faith in God, and I took my vows seriously. But for me to get to that point, you realize that it was really, really bad. So I went to that group, and I heard good advice, you know, about taking care of me. And maybe a lot of people wouldn't implement that advice, but I'm a fix-it guy. You know, I own a gas station. I used to be an auto mechanic. So I like to fix things that are broken, and I was broken. And by golly, I was going to fix me. And these guys were telling me what to do, and so I did it. So the number one thing that caregivers have to do, and when someone tells you what to do, when they see that you're in a bad place and you want to get better, and not just be, you know, in a victim mentality the rest of your life. Follow directions and get better. And that's what I did. And I got better. And my daughter helped out. You know, you can't do this all by yourself. And so she brought in an organizing whiteboard. And she says, okay, I've got all these people who said they want to help. And this person's coming in on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And this person's coming in on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And this person comes in the morning. And this one in the afternoon. And she made it so much easier. And then her parents just happened to be going through an eviction in a town a couple hours away. And so we came to the conclusion, well, why don't you come and live with us? We're helping you out because you're going to get kicked out of your place. And you're helping us out because I can go to work and I know she's in good hands and so on. So it was a process, you know, and just dealing with the guilt that I'm not doing enough and I'm not doing it good enough. And of course, it isn't fun living with your mother-in-law because,
imagine,
you know,
yeah.
we clash and she wants to do it one way. And I, you know, the occupational therapist told me to help your wife heal by letting her learn to do things by herself. Now, she's a gourmet cook. She was in the kitchen. She wanted to cook meals. And her mother says, oh, no, I'll cook the meals. And I said, no, the therapist says that she needs to. So things like just reaching for something in the top shelf. Charlene gets out of her chair. She's reaching. And I would say, come on, you can do it. Stand on your toes. You're almost there. And I'm pushing her a little bit. And her mother says, no. And so we disagreed about that. But you know what? I won. And now instead of my wife becoming an invalid where everybody does everything for her, she became very independent. She does the laundry. She does the cooking. I come home from work. Dinner's on the table. The floor is clean. The dishes are in the dishwasher. She's amazing. She's like a one-armed wallpaper hanger. And I like to think that I had something to do with that. I'm very blessed.
That's fantastic. So let's talk about what a lot of people kind of don't put together. I mean, you have had this really in-your-face experience of having to take care of you or losing yourself or disappearing, you know.
Yeah.
But isn't this true that in all relationships, in all circumstances, intimate, you know, whether it's family, children, marriage, parents, whatever, that if we do not recognize that we're responsible to take care of ourselves emotionally and, you know, intellectually and physically, that relationships become burdensome. That's why people get depressed. That's why people are lonely. That's why people, you know, become very disillusioned with love and what have you. And so isn't it a wonderful awakening for you as an individual to have gone through this with your wife, to realize that you're the person who's responsible for you, and help her to realize that she in many ways is responsible for her, and rather than being an invalid, she is functional and she is doing things and living a life that she wouldn't have if she were dependent. You know, if you were there to do all of those things for her. Let me ask you, Dave, what do you think, or what did she think? Did anybody come to the conclusion as to why she might have had the stroke? Was she too stressed? Was there too much stress? Was she pushing too hard? Did she have high blood pressure? What actually brought about the stress for your wife, the stroke for your wife?
Well, she was actually in perfect health. We both were. You know, we saw doctors regularly. She was going through menopause, and at the time, in the 90s, they came out with this Prempro, which is progesterone and Provera together. And before that, she was taking estrogen. You know, this, and they had just switched her over from the individual ingredients to this one pill. And so maybe we think, because I remember counting the pills and there were a couple missing, maybe she was taking two of these pills like she had in the past, of two different pills, instead of one. She was going through a lot of stress as well. Our second daughter was getting married, and it was very, very stressful because her maid of honor was her sister, and they were starting to go through you know, some things from their past. And so Charlene was in the middle trying to be the peacemaker, and it just blew up in her face, and her sister bowed out from being, you know, the maid of honor. And so you can imagine, I mean, this is really big for women, but it's hard for a man to relate to all of this. But yeah, she was going through a lot of stress. And so that's probably the reason that would happen. The hospital itself could not come up with a reason. He says, you know, we don't know why it happened. Some reason a blood clot just popped out of your heart. There was no medical reason for it to happen. She wore this monitor on her heart for 24 hours. It didn't happen again. And it's rare for a person who had a stroke to go 23 years without another stroke, because really you're 50% more likely to have another stroke after your first stroke. But yet she never did. She had one seizure, never had another seizure in 23 years. And so they scratch their heads. They just kind of think of it as a fluke. She was only 52, which is very young to have a stroke. We went to this young stroke support group. There were people in there who were 21 who had a stroke.
Yeah.
20% of people who have strokes are actually young people, and most of the time they don't know why they had a stroke. But as far as you talked about our relationship, we have a better marriage than most normal people. You know, we communicate better than most people who know how to talk. And that just, you know, perplexes me. It just means that relationships and communication, like they say, 85% nonverbal. It isn't actually what you say, but how you say it. And the gestures and the expressions on your face and the tonality and all of that. I mean, I heard her speaking to a guy at a restaurant while we were waiting for our table for 20 minutes. And I look over there, and they're just laughing and slapping each other's on the back and just having a good old time. And I'm saying, what the heck are they talking about? And she's just so nonverbal. He had no idea that she cannot even talk. And we went to the National Publicity Summit to bring guests into our radio show in New York. And all of the producers came right over to her because she's just like this magnificent, glowing person. And they start a conversation with her, and they'll talk to her for, you know, 60 seconds, 2 minutes. And then they'll come over to me, and I'll explain to them that she can't talk. She said, well, wait a minute, I was having a conversation. I says, no, she was communicating, but she wasn't talking. I mean, she's that good.
So, okay, so what you're saying is that you've reached a point in the communication that it's going really quite well. And how did she learn to actually express herself? You were talking about some different techniques. What are some of the things that people can use in addition to verbal language? What are the other ways that we can express ourselves to people who, you know, are taking care of us?
So you're talking about stroke speech impairment in particular, or just...
Well, in other words, you were talking about some different techniques that were used for, you know, for her to communicate with you. What are those techniques? Yeah.
Well, like I said, they were just two different games, like charades. I mean, everyone has played charades where you're not allowed to speak. You're just allowed to use, you know, gestures and stuff like that, and facial expressions, and that's her life. I mean, that's her language. So it's 24 hours a day, charades, and then Pictionary, because she can give you a clue by spelling words, but her brain doesn't remember how to spell a word. If she wants to go to the supermarket, for example, we have a supermarket called Ralph's, she may write out R-A-S. Or R-A-L-S. And so you have to figure out what that clue is and what she's trying to say. And I'm pretty good. People are amazed that I seem to get about 80% of what she is saying. She'll try to talk. She's very outgoing. I mean, she'll come up to strangers and just talk about, you know, how beautiful they are, or how nice their hair looks, or how beautiful of what they're wearing. And I am surprised at how they usually understand what she's trying to say, even though she can't say it. And people are perceptive these days. They can figure out quickly that, okay, this person must not be able to speak. You know, maybe they're mute or something. They don't know exactly what's going on, but they know something's coming on. I have a gas station. Every now and then a person will come in and they won't really talk. They'll kind of grunt and point to things or write things, and I'll know that they have a problem as well. So it's amazing how much communication we can do just by being nonverbal, and you can practice. One time I put duct tape over my mouth because I wanted to empathize with my wife. I want to see what's going on with her and how hard it is to communicate without using our mouth. And you know what? I'm such a wimp. I had to rip that duct tape off in 20 minutes because I couldn't do it.
Wow.
So God bless her. She's a hero and she's amazing. And she is just makes us normal people like whiners and complainers.
Oh, well, you're still in love with your wife, clearly. As a matter of fact, you told me you wrote a book about your relationship, One
yeah.
Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. And the book was all about you and your relationship. So
right.
It sounds to me, and I don't know, but I know that the listeners would love to hear this, that you fell in love forever and you are still in love with your wife 45 years later, even though she has experienced, you know, this hardship and you've experienced this hardship. So drilling down into that, Dave, what's the glue? What's the glue that keeps your love alive and vibrant?
Well, without sounding cliche-ish, it is our faith in God. Because without our relationship with Jesus Christ, I don't think I could do this. He just gives me the grace and the power. And there are verses in the Bible. We read the Bible every day. There are verses in the Bible that says, all things work together for good to them that love him.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we're going through something, then he gives us whatever we need to get through it. So whenever you feel like, oh my God, I can't get through this. I know the Bible says that I've got what I need, but I can't do this. I've exceeded whatever it is he gave me. And you know what? So you go to bed and you wake up the next morning and you realize, well, I went through it. What do you know? And I guess I did have what it takes. So, you know, he pushes us right to the limit. You know, many factories do what's called a tensile breaking stress point, you know, titanium. And they will sit there and they will bend that titanium and bend it until it breaks, because they need to know at what, how much pressure it will take to break titanium. And that's kind of what God does to us. He pushes us out of our comfort zone. He pushes us to our limit, and it makes us stronger. And so without, like I says, without apologizing, I have to say, If I did not know God, if I didn't have a relationship with him, if I and both of us together, then I think we would have given up a long, long time ago. And we just took our vows seriously. You know, the divorce rate these days are 50%, and it's even that high in the church these days. So just because we're Christians and serve God doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, life is going to be a bed of roses. The Bible says the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. So, I mean, everyone's going to go through stuff.
Exactly.
And if you're a Christian, you just have help, you know, because I've cried out to him many a time, and so has she. And many times people will say, well, how do you do it? How do you wake up every morning just to do it all over again? And she just smiles and looks up to heaven and points her finger up and says, God, one of the few words that she can say. And so that she inspires so many people. Many of them just walk away in tears saying, what the heck am I complaining about? This woman can't speak. She can't walk. She's been like this for 23 years. She has a smile on her face, joy in her heart. This guy is married to a woman who is not the same woman that he married. And he's happy. He talks about her. He's written books about her. He goes and speaks on stages and on TV and talks about her. They just don't get it. But the ones who love God, they get it.
Well, what I hear you saying is that you have both made a strong commitment to your commitment. I've had this conversation with my children. I have two grown married children and one daughter who's only 27. But when they were talking about getting married, the conversation I had with them is, you know, marriage is like everything else in life. There are no promises, and a lot of times it's painful, and there's a lot to learn and a lot to go through, and it's kind of day by day. But if you make a commitment to the commitment, which is part of your spiritual process and part of your spiritual life, and I've known people from many different religious backgrounds, I think when there is this sense of the other God if you will, that we are working through this with. It's so much more doable when we feel that we have this this divine intervention. It's really quite wonderful.
And that's and what our church saw something in us, and so they actually made us marriage counselors for about 3 years at our church, and we saved a lot of marriages from breaking up, amazingly enough.
That's absolutely wonderful, and I'm sure that the gift, you know, the suffering and the gift that you've received as a result of this process, Dave, I'm sure it has uplifted both of you and many, many other people around you. It's a wonderful story. We have to take another break, our last break. We'll have about 10 minutes when we get back. But when we come back, let's talk about, you said to me, caregiving can be fun. Have a closed mind and you're a victim, you know, and have an open mind and, you know, you can really be happy with the process. And you talked about how people, there are like a third, and a third, how people react to caregiving. And then you talked about the big mistakes and the wonderful resilient techniques that people can use. So let's talk about those things, about how people react, what are the three big mistakes not to do, and then what are some of the wonderful things that people can do. So listeners, don't go anywhere. We're coming back again very shortly with a Dave Nassany, and we're going to hear the secrets. We always like to save the best for the last, Dave, so we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
Today we're talking to Dave Dasseny, and Dave is a number one best-selling author and caregiving expert. And he speaks to us about how to deal with what we go through, the process of, you know, the anxiety and the suffering and the burnout and the grief process when we are caregiving those that we love. So, Dave, before the break, we talked about what we discussed during the pre-interview. Do you want to share with us the, you gave me categories. You said, yeah, you know, there are some, you know, there are three categories that people kind of tend to fall into one of those three categories. What are those categories, and what do we need to know about the mistakes not to make and the positive things to bring to the situation?
You know, I wrote my book, It's My Life to Thrive, to Stay Alive as a Caregiver, because I wanted to help caregivers stay alive. 30% of them die before their loved ones do. Many more become sicker than the ones they're caring for, eventually needing a caregiver of their own, becoming hospitalized. And that doesn't help the one that they're caring for, because many times maybe another family member who isn't as compassionate or empathetic will just throw that person in a nursing home and, you know, where they'll never be seen again, because 9 out of 10 nursing homes, God, I would put my cat in. So it takes a lot of work to find a place to put your loved one in. But I come to the conclusion that I just can't help a third of the caregivers out there, because I have a Facebook page with 35,000 followers and I hear stories all the time. And, you know, I try to be positive and uplifting and say, you know, caregiving can be fun and uplifting, and it can be rewarding, and, you know, you're helping this person. And there are just some people who are just so fried to a crisp, burned out, that they argue with me online and say, that's ridiculous. You know, caregiving can never be fun. I feel like I'm in prison, and let me tell you what happened today, you know. And they just go on and on with some of the most horrendous stories or experiences that happen. And so I get it. I can relate that, okay, you're having a bad day, but that they are just so closed-minded and so into victim mentality, and they must have done something bad and karma's punishing them, that I don't think I will ever be able to help them. And according to statistics, since 30% of them are dying, even though there are resources out there, I found them, you know. If there's a will, there's a way, so to speak. I mean, I wanted to be fixed, so I sought out solutions to my problems. But why are a third of caregivers dying before their loved ones do, when there are solutions out there, right? When there is water out there. They say you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink it. Why aren't they drinking the water?
Don't you think we make choices? You were saying there are third people who they're just miserable, that you can't break through, and they die. Then you got a third of people who suffer. What was the description of what you said? The second third, they get sick themselves, you know, rather than dying, they just get burnt out and they get sick. And then there is a third that tend to be resilient. And you know, it's funny because I've been in medicine for a very long time, and you could take almost any circumstance and break it into a third, and a third. You were talking about menopause. A third of women go through menopause, they don't even know they went through it. A third of women go through menopause and they have a, you know, they suffer, they have a difficult time. And a third of women go through menopause and they practically have to be institutionalized. I mean, there seems to be, you know, like certain dynamics that take place in human nature. So what you're saying is there are some people, they choose not to solve the problem.
It depends a lot on a person's temperament and their personality. You know, the color test, remember, some people are very money motivated. Some people are very save the whale, save the planet motivated. Some people are very fun motivated, you know, got to have fun. And then there's that segment of the population who are just very, you know, anal and organized. You know, those are the accountants and the engineers. And so all of those people are caregivers. And depending on what kind of temperament you have and what kind of balance you have between all those temperaments, because we rarely are one kind of temperament. But yes, unfortunately, I wish it was a third, but only about 10% of caregivers are really happy and optimistic. And my goal is to make that number grow. And so my book is for people who know that they need to put their needs first, but they just don't know how. The ones that you described and that I described that are just so negative, they're going to be negative no matter what.
Exactly.
You know,
I
think about the little boy who had to shovel manure out of the barn, and he's just having a good time, and he's shoveling, and somebody says, "Why are you so happy? You're shoveling, you know, horse poop out of the barn." He says, "I don't know, with all this poop down here, there's got to be a pony under it somewhere," you know. And talk about an optimistic attitude. You know,
absolutely.
That's the kind we got to have.
I can't believe we only have minutes left. Couple things. I want to mention your book again. It's My Life to Thrive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver. And I'm sure that people can find that on Amazon, on your website. We do want to mention your website as well. Your website is www.caregiverdave.com. That's caregiverdave.com. And you can find Dave's books. He has multiple ones. He has a number one bestseller, and his new book is It's My Life to Strive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver. Before we close, I want to run really fast through what you said to me. You said the three big mistakes not to make is not learning how to put your needs first, not asking for help, and feeling guilty, because those things are not positive. Those are actually somewhat negative. And the things you must do is you must develop and address any issues with your self-esteem. Know that you're worth being robust, alive, happy, and vibrant, and know that that is your gift as a human being from the world, and boundaries. And what you were talking about with your wife is how you learned boundaries. When you drew your boundaries around yourself, you were able to invite her into recognizing that she needed to step up into that. And so by us setting a wonderful example, by us loving ourselves, we give people the permission to love themselves in a new way as well. Yes?
Yes, and I can give you in 30 seconds some tips. I came up with a CARE formula, C-A-R-E. Communicate with your friends. Be specific. Ask for help. And don't turn it down when it's offered. Rest. Caregivers need 8 hours rest every single night. The average only gets 2 or 3. I can't survive on that. And E is eat healthy, nutritious food. Don't eat junk foods. And with coronavirus, you know, you've got to wash your hands often every 20 seconds, lather them up. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, mouth. Avoid close contact with the infected. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your coughs and sneezes. Let's be smart out there, because the elderly and caregivers with compromised immune systems are most susceptible.
Right. And what we want to say to everybody is stay safe. Take care of yourself. Not only love your partner, your mother, your sister, your relative, but love yourself and bring that self-love and bring that care to you just as well as to the people that you're caring about. Dave, thank you so much for being with us.
And lastly, three free gifts. Just go to caregiverdave.com and look for them. All you have to do is they're yours for the taking. Caregiverdave.com.
Wonderful. Dave, thank you so much for being with us today.
It has been
wonderful. And listeners, don't forget to join us again next week for another uplifting, inspiring, and educational program here on living above the drama.